Hello, everybody, and welcome along to the Event Industry News Podcast with me, James Dixon, wishing you all a very good morning, afternoon, or evening, whenever or wherever you tune into today's podcast from. Forgive me if I sound a little bit different today. I'm carrying the winter cold. Have no sympathy for me at all, everybody. I'm just a little bit bunged up, so I may sound a little bit nasally and a little bit strange, but hopefully, as with all of our podcasts, the talking from me is minimal. What we want to do is hear from our guest. And for those of you who listen to the podcast regularly, you will know that at the start of this year, I said that we were going to go off topic, for want of a better phrase. And rather than focusing on specific topics and getting guests on to talk about those, we would actually just get some really interesting people from the events industry on to talk about themselves and talk about what they do and see where the conversation evolves from to that point. So I'm delighted to say that today is one of those podcasts. Joining me today is the Global Technology Adoption Manager for Informa, Mr. John Regis. John, thank you very much for joining the podcast this morning.
Good morning, James, and thank you for having me.
And we're going to be finding out a little bit about you, John, what you do, what your job role is, because it's a great job title, and a job title really that probably didn't exist in the events market, you know, until recently. You know, I was speaking to somebody on a podcast just, you know, a few days ago in the recording, but people may have already listened to that possibly a few weeks ago by the time this drops, that, you know, job roles like yours, Global Technology Adoption Manager, are still relatively new in the grand scheme of things in the events sphere, certainly. Before we get into a little bit about what you actually do and what your job role means at Informa, tell us a little bit about yourself and your career pathway and how it's led you to where you are today.
My journey to becoming technology or global technology adoption manager has actually been quite an interesting one. I've always been interested in technology from a young age, you know, building PCs. I built my first PC in 1999. I went on to run a very small sort of digital marketing agency focusing on WordPress websites, SEO, and social media marketing. I always like to teach and sort of help people out. So I became a qualified trainer and assessor between 2010 and 2012. I used to deliver training and coaching to my clients and also present sort of free courses, informational courses at the City Business Library as well. Then in 2015, I started working at UBM, as what it was known back then, which, by the way, you know, my introduction into that was my first introduction into the events business. I had a recruiter that contacted me. You know, they said I was the perfect person for the role, which I at the time disagreed. But I went on to get the job at what was then a digital product trainer within the event technology sort of department within UBM. It kind of started there, really. And through my holistic approach to training has always meant that I've looked at all aspects of a successful training, not just how you use something, but why you should use it, when you should use it, in what manner. Do you need to change certain processes to get the best out of that usage of technology? And all of these things and more I would research and learn about in order to deliver what I regarded as the best training possible. You know, that was one of my passions. And most of that actually included adoption, which at the time I didn't know. Combined with my passion to continuously improve, tweak, revamp, find and fill gaps, the evolution into my current role, which, you know, you said, you know, hasn't really been around in the events industry, and you're correct, because my current role, I actually worked with my director at the time to actually create, because it didn't exist in the business, but I saw a gap, I saw a need for it. So everything worked out there, and it's led me to where I am today.
Well, tell us a little bit about the day to day then, in being an adoption manager for technology then. How does that manifest itself?
It's a very busy role. So as technology adoption manager, my role is basically to help my organization integrate and use technology effectively. This involves managing the adoption of new and also existing systems and technology, conducting user and business need analysis, and defining and supporting the execution of process-related improvements, sometimes to boost that productivity. There's a lot of meetings involved, brainstorming, sort of innovation. There's lots of cross-team collaboration, which does make it a very, very busy role.
For a company the size of Informa and the amount of technology, and if we, you know, talk about them in the sense of platforms, you know, you'll be using certain platforms and you know, to manage your own internal processes. Mm-hmm. And then as a company that organize events, all of your events will themselves use technology, either related to things like the registration process, the planning process, the floor planning, you know, all of these. We've, I know some people refer to it as the tech stack in a particular event, but, you know, how do you juggle both the internal technology used to run the business of Informa, but also the technology then that's used to actually run and execute the events that they are delivering?
I think, first of all, it's important to understand that technology is technology. So your general approach has got to be that it's technology. Then we basically simply define what's used for an event or to deliver an event. So that could be event websites where exhibitors, you know, showcase, people register, to registration, to on-site technology as well, which is different to, you know, your core technologies, is what I call them, which we'll use in your day-to-day business. Things like ServiceNow, for example, and ERPs, etc.
And you know, the good point. I like the use of core, sort of core technologies. As somebody who's responsible for adoption, are you integral in the process of new technologies being brought into the business, or is it the execution and then the training of the teams of people in those new technologies, or is it a case that you're involved in both?
Been involved in both. More the or less of sort of the implementation or the integration, sort of the start, and more the adoption of something that's actually been brought in. But I believe that they really should be, it should be more 60-40% in terms of, you know, innovation, going out there, seeing what's available, bringing that into the business and saying, look, this is what we found, this is what we feel, you know, would benefit the business based on, you know, the objectives and goals that we have, based on the users' feedback, needs, etc. Because I do work closely with what we call end users in all capacity. So I think moving forward, that's where our focus should be. As you know, technology adoption managers, that's where our focus should be.
Yeah, I've sat through a lot of tech demos with companies as an event organizer, and as somebody who's, you know, part of the team for Event Tech Live as a trade show. You know, I've had to sit through a lot of tech demos from companies who have got the latest platform, and this is going to transform how we're doing things. And often the thing that really, where they fall over and has let a lot of platform providers and technology providers down is really that they've brought it to the demo and brought it to market level without really having put it in the hands of organizers and event production people to actually see how it works on a day-to-day level. How does that process work for you, and how much of your time has to be spent learning new technologies, first of all, so that you understand them inside out before you can then, you know, take them to other people within the organization?
A lot of time is spent learning, understanding the technology, but also a lot of time is spent learning and understanding the individuals that are going to use that technology. So it's kind of a 50-50 kind of balance. Sometimes it's more of one than the other. But it's very important, if you're going out there to look for a technology, or in the case of, you know, where you explained, you've been to a lot of tech demos, I think as an adoption manager for them, the adoption manager should be going out to, you know, these event companies, connecting with them, finding out more about them, because we're all an events company, but we may operate differently, and finding out how we could use their product better. And if they need to make any tweaks, which sometimes, you know, may be the case, then they'll find out a lot of that information through what we may call focus groups. Mm.
And does adoption or being an adoption manager also mean not adopting something when it's not appropriate? Because again, a lot of people, there's like the emperor's new clothes. Oh, there's this fancy new thing, we've got to have it. You know, Informal will run so many different events, I presume, for so many different marketplaces and sectors, mm-hmm. that there can't possibly be a one-size-fits-all approach. So adoption must also be sometimes make a decision not to adopt.
Yes. Again, you've got to assess, you know, what's that technology? You've got to align that or the use of that technology to your goals, aspirations, objectives, not just of the business, but of that particular event in question. So for example, AI is, you know, really big. I see that touching sort of anything and everything. But how you use that and when you use that in your event may depend on the type of event that it is. Is it hybrid or is it just, you know, sort of in person or online?
Mm. And going back to something you said at the beginning about the holistic approach to it, and you were building PCs, you know, when you were, you know, younger, and you know, there was obviously a natural inquisition, I guess, about that type of thing that led you to just thinking, oh, what if I plug this into here or connect this to here? And do you find, since then coming into a business like Informa, the colleagues and the people that you're working with in technology teams have come from, are they mostly now from an academic technology background, or have they had, you know, these sort of more holistic pathways? Is it a combination of both? I'm curious to know what the other people who work in technology teams now in companies like Informa are comprised of and what their backgrounds are.
I think overall, it's a balance of both. You know, I'm 45, so I'm not as young as I look, but I come from a sort of generation where, yeah, I did a lot myself. My approach to learning is, a lot of it is self-taught. You know, I'm very inquisitive, self-learner. I'm always trying to learn new things, find out new things. Yes, I've taken some academic routes, but I find out I work best and find out more by, you know, just sort of working on my own initiative, finding out from other people and things like that. Mm. I'm practical. I'm highly practical in things, especially in technology. And I think while I was always interested in technology, I think I had more developed that by watching Formula One, which,
oh, really?
You know, I'm an avid fan. Yeah. And you know, anyone that does know about Formula One is, it's very technical. They're always pushing the boundaries. They're always working on bettering something that, you know, they've just created or you know, just made good. So it's a high intense industry, Formula One, and it's very exciting to me.
Yeah, and I guess that there are some comparisons and parallels that you can draw, you know, from things like that. You know, they're in high-end sport and in something like Formula One, you know, it's always, you know, everyone can get to that level, you know, but it then becomes down to tiny percentage points, doesn't it? You know, can you make it 0.2%, 0.3% better, you know, because that will then translate to quite a big difference on the actual track. In the same way that in business and in a company the size of Informa, refinements and an extra 0.5% or an extra 1%, you know, whether that be attendance or registration in an event, is going to translate ultimately to something that's quite significant. So, mm-hmm. you know, this is maybe where a lot of businesses, certainly from a technology point of view, don't see that actually the small refinements can have a big difference on their business longer term.
Yeah. And, you know, if you have a model that's working, small refinements are great. You know, you don't really want to reinvent the wheel unless you have to. Like in Formula One, when a team has a really good package, they're always working on just refining and tweaking. But sometimes the rules change where they have to, you know, make a big overhaul. So for the events industry, this was COVID, you know, and a lot, it was intense and a lot of events evolved within that period. And I think they've come out stronger.
What was that period like for you as somebody who worked specifically in the technology teams? I kind of get an inkling for what you might say, but I've got to ask the question.
It was absolutely busy. It was very busy. On some occasions, because obviously everyone was working from home, there was a lot of core technologies like Microsoft Teams that we had just implemented that needed to be rolled out, and needed to be rolled out very fast because everybody's now working remotely and they need to learn how to use this tool efficiently. But yeah, it was busy. There was times when, you know, I found I didn't even sort of go outside to get any sunlight. But it was good. Always being kept, you know, kept busy. You know, some, you know, people were on furlough. I'm not a person that is stagnant. I always like to keep myself busy. It's how I work best. I do work very well under pressure as well. But it was a tough time, but also very interesting and informative time as well.
Did you find that processes and, you know, administrative processes were either got rid of or sped up significantly because of that sudden demand and the change in it? Did you find that actually, you know, you were getting more things done at a quicker pace because of that desire suddenly within the whole industry and the need to go down the digital route? Whereas prior to the pandemic, excuse me, that there was still a hesitancy in certain areas of the events industry as to whether or not digital routes and digital events were a viable thing?
Yes, I think forced evolution and change is always best. Yeah, it's nice when, you know, we have a comfortable space to, you know, evolve and grow and improve things. But, you know, when everybody's faced with the same platform, the same landscape, we've just got to get on and do what we have to do to improve and make sure that the business that we are involved in, you know, is successful. And, you know, hybrid events, online events, you know, a lot of them were very, very successful when, you know, we thought that they might not have been. Face-to-face is still good, but hybrid events is definitely something that I think will need to improve and evolve in the future.
Has it led to you having separate teams or parallel strands of teams? Because when I spoke to a lot of people on the podcast about how they would see the event space evolving post-pandemic and when we got back to running live events, and all of our live event teams then had to sort of become digital experts, you know, in a space of a few days. And there was very much this thinking that to run successful hybrid events post-pandemic, it would be wrong to just rely on the same group of people to deliver both elements of it. Is that the case in your own business, where you have people who are in a hybrid event scenario, people who are dedicated to the digital side of things and other people who are dedicated to the live side of things that work in a joined up way?
Yes, we do. And yes, you're correct. I think when you're looking at online versus, you know, physical, they're separate and they're very niche in their own sort of right. You should definitely have specialists within that specific area because they are different. And as the landscape evolves, as, you know, things improve, it will get more targeted, more niche, and the specialization of an online event or a hybrid event, actually, where two of them are actually going on simultaneously, you'll definitely need to have those separate people that are specialized or versed in those industries.
And it's interesting. I'm kind of the belief that we were all running hybrid events unknowingly, you know, years ago, because, you know, smartphones have been around now for what, you know, coming up to 20 years. And so if you think pre-pandemic, there wasn't a live event that I went to where people weren't on their mobile phones, you know, taking video, photo, putting it on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, whatever they were doing, you know, at business events, people would be sharing experiences and video and photos and comments and things on LinkedIn. There would be hashtags for events. So in some ways, I think our events have been hybrid for a while just because of the way that we conduct ourselves on a day-to-day basis, that we, you know, we live out of our smartphones now. And so even an event that didn't say it was hybrid, if you've got people sat there in the audience and they're taking photos of people on stage and they're putting them onto social media, you're taking that event then into a digital space. I'm wondering what you may think of that, whether or not actually we've been hybrid for longer than we realize we've been hybrid.
In my opinion, I would say we've been sort of tinkering on the edge of hybrid. Hybrid to me is where you're incorporating two elements in the same. So like a hybrid car, starts off as electric, maybe up till 10, 15 miles per hour, and then your petrol kicks in. So you're getting the same, at least for the beginning, movement of that vehicle by using electric versus petrol. So with a hybrid event, it's someone that's joining online, whether it's from a smartphone because they're traveling to the event, or you know, from their computer or whatever it is, should have the same or similar experience as someone that's there in person. So, you know, whether you're listening to speakers, engaging in certain demos, etc., you know, looking at certain stands, exhibitors, what they're doing, being able to engage with their content, whatever they have there in person or online. And that's the real sort of the truth of hybrid to me.
I'm going to shift the conversation ever so slightly here while I've got you on today to talk about the calendar year and how it pans out for you. You know, how do you shape learning new technologies that the business might want to bring in, developing a means and a clear process in which that can then be rolled out and adopted? Are there periods of time where you have to go through, you know, be quite insular on your own, as in you're learning some of the technologies, you're looking at processes and how to implement them, and other times where you spend with a lot of people and in these meetings? How does the sort of the rolling year pan out for you in this role?
That's a really good question. I try to plan and strategize as much as possible over a sort of sort of 6 months, but also then quarterly as well. So every quarter, you know, I'll look at maybe what's new, what are the objectives, how are we as a business achieving those, what projects are coming in as well. So I mostly work on projects at the moment. We've got a number of changes for the better going on within the business. But they're still the day-to-day. They're still the BAU, business as usual, as we call it. So, just planning, systemizing. We do have a lot of catch-up meetings on a weekly basis just to make sure that, you know, our daily tasks are aligned to our goals as well. And depending whether it's a project or whether I believe I have some free time, then yes, I will always looking at learning about new technologies that are similar to the ones that we have already. You know, is there anything better out there? Are there any changes coming to the technologies that we have?
How are the, from a people point of view, how much better have we become, full stop, at adopting new technologies, new practices? I'm not going to ask about sort of demographics and stuff and ages of people, because I kind of think that's irrelevant. I've seen young people not be able to figure something out. I've seen older people be able to just pick up an iPad and absolutely fly. But how much better do you think we become as a whole in learning and picking up new practices and new technologies really quickly?
I think we've become a lot better, especially, you know, post-COVID. I think adoption for me, first and foremost, is a mindset. So, yes, we have different sort of levels in terms of how easy we may pick up a technology, but are we willing to actually do that? You know, are we willing to embrace that change, no matter how difficult it may be for us? And if we are, you know, it may be that you will always need support on how to use a certain technology, but you're willing to do it. And that for me is the beginning of where adoption starts.
And I've heard, and it's you know, I hate having to say this, but I've heard people of an older generation, and not old people, just, you know, of a slightly more wiser in their years, maybe, than some of us. There's one phrase that really bugs me more than anything else, which is, I'm not very tech savvy. I hear that loads of, oh, you're going to have to show me how to do it. I'm not very tech savvy. And I kind of think that there are very few people who can live in 2024 and actually genuinely be able to say, I'm not very tech savvy, because people get a new TV and they figure out how to log into Netflix and use the apps that are on the TV and go on BBC iPlayer to watch a catch up of EastEnders. You know, people know how to work a smart speaker now and get it connected to their Wi-Fi at home, you know. And so people who use that phrase, I see it often as a way to just dodge what you said, a willingness to actually learn and change.
Yeah. I think it's understanding actually what does tech savvy even mean. Most deem it to mean that, you know, they are highly versed in technology. They'll always be good at figuring it out in a simple way. That's not always the case. I've, you know, some technologies have come on my plate that have been really difficult for me to actually learn and engage with and actually understand how it works. But you're right. You know, we have cars that are, you know, smart cars, some, you know, help us drive on the motorway and things like that. So yeah, I think in this day and age, unless you're not using technology, which I can't think of anyone that isn't, you are tech savvy. We're living in a technological age, so
if you could go on the Ryanair app and book a flight and get on that flight, then, you know, you've cracked the case in some respects, you know, because platform developers now, particularly app developers, and when they're making mobile apps for smartphones, which is how the, you know, the majority of people now will now access, you know, what they think of technology is via a device. You know, we've got so much better at the interfacing and the user experience, haven't we, with stuff like that. You know, I remember early examples that were really clunky, you know, and they hadn't really thought out pathways and experiences and things. But there's very rarely any sort of mobile app, particularly now, that comes to market that hasn't been thought out and is not intuitive. People tap on it and literally within a couple of seconds, they can figure out where they should be tapping next. And that, I think that's become so important in tech adoption, is the tech companies themselves actually realizing that they've got to make it easy and the user experience has got to come down to seconds, figuring it out within seconds.
Yeah. Just making things simple. Funny enough, I can't remember what technology it was. It was online. It was, I think, about 2 days ago. I looked at it and just the way that they had designed and structured the user interface was just clear. The pictures matched the titles. Everything was simple. The wording was easy to understand. And it made it, for me, easy for anybody, or easier for anybody that's engaging with that, to understand, you know, what it is, but also how to actually use it, which sort of, yes, it does help a lot with with adoption, but also with how a user will engage with that technology, and ultimately, will they use it or will they not use it?
Yeah. The whole subject of user interface is experience of using it. It is something completely different, because I think we have, time is so precious now, you know, and it's, you know, all the stats are out there, and there are better podcasts than this to listen to for sort of stats on people's attention spans, and, you know, why, you know, things like Instagram Reels and Facebook Reels, you know, why we watch those sort of videos now, because, you know, we just want to watch quick 10-second content. And I think that all filters back to the technology providers and the developers realizing that, you know, if they've not got something that people can understand in a matter of seconds, then ultimately it's not going to work. If you've got to dive through 3 or 4 different menus on something, particularly in the event space, I think that's really relevant, bringing it back to that, because I think, you know, when you look at registration, for example, The process has got to be quick. You've got to click a button. You've got to know what you need to enter. It can't be a long, drawn-out process. There can't be any complications to the screens or the buttons that you've got to push. You know, it's got to work quickly, because if not, you're running the risk of people not registering for your event. It's that simple. They'll make a decision in a matter of seconds. Oh, I can't be bothered. And they'll move on to something else.
Yeah, and I think they've got to understand the story rather than look at how it can be operated more easy. And I always use Apple as an example. Their adoption, for me, is sort of at the top. They focus on not how the operational use of, let's say, an iPhone or an iPad, but sort of a story of how and when you'll use this, why you'll use it. And it actually makes it easier for you to actually use and engage with their products.
Yeah. And it's an interesting one, that on Apple as a whole, you know, that they've created a thing. There's no instruction manual with a phone anymore.
Yeah.
You know, you think about any piece of technology that, you know, you get an air fryer out the box now and there's an instruction manual on how to use it. You know, to say how much we rely on the device, it's been years since any of the smartphone manufacturers have really included instructions. Nobody needs to figure out how to turn them on anymore, or what to tap, or what to use. You know, there was an iOS update the other day or last week, and I noticed that there's a new app that's appeared on my phone called Journal.
Wow.
And I've just thought, I've not seen that before. Mm-hmm. But you kind of instinctively know it's going to be Apple, just because of the way that the app icon is designed on the home screen. I thought, this looks like Apple, and it's gone onto my phone without me knowing it, so it's probably an iOS. So I tapped on it, you know, welcome to Journal. Get in the habit, you know, and just the way that they introduce you to something is so well thought out. Mm-hmm. Visually, it's clear. From a text point of view, it's minimal. You kind of tap something, you forget. And within a couple of seconds, you kind of go, you have this moment of clarity. We go, oh, I get it. I realize what it is.
Yeah.
And that, to me, from bringing the whole subject back to adoption, you want people really to just look at something and go, ah, I get it.
Yeah.
That's where it begins and ends. John, I'm looking at the clock today. We're already we're beyond half an hour on today's episode.
It's gone quick.
It's flown past today. And as we want to wrap up today's episode, before we do so, if people work in the event space, they're fellow sort of event technology people or work in a similar capacity, maybe you even just want to talk to John about his experiences and pick his brains about stuff. Presumably they can find you on LinkedIn if they want to connect with you.
Yeah, they can find me on LinkedIn. My name is John Regis. So LinkedIn, I think, / John Regis. Yeah, feel free to connect, reach out to me. I'll be definitely willing and excited to do so.
Yeah, and hit us up with your technology experiences. If you listen to this today or watch it today and you work in a similar sort of thing and you've got something to add, maybe you'd like to come on and have a similar sort of chat and tell us about your own experiences of the deployment and the adoption of technology within your own event organisation. So please do get in touch with us, you know, whether it's via Twitter or LinkedIn. Get in touch with the podcast. We'd love to hear from you. And on the subject of getting in touch with us, if you're listening to the podcast today via your podcast platform, don't forget to head over to eventindustrynews.com, where you can find the latest news, features, special supplements, as well as the A to Z supplier directory. If you work in the events industry and you're looking for a product, a service, or a supplier, the chances are you will find it on the A to Z supplier directory over on eventindustrynews.com, where you can also find video versions of all of our podcasts. Of course, you may have already started your journey today on the website watching the video version of the podcast. If you have, thanks very much for tuning in, and don't forget to have a little look around the website, the news, features, special supplements, but also go in the opposite direction, search for the Event Industry News podcast wherever you get your audio podcasts from, and make sure you subscribe to receive the latest editions as they drop each week. My thanks to John Regis, Global Technology Adoption Manager over Informa, for joining us today. John, it's been a pleasure to have you on the podcast. Thanks very much for taking a little bit of time out.
Thank you, James. Thank you for having me.
No problem at all. And we will see all of you and hear all of you again on the next edition of the Event Industry News podcast. Thanks for tuning in, everybody.